This is an ABC podcast.
We begin this broadcast by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which this match will be played today and pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples listening.
Sports coverage of the 2025 NRL Premiership.
On your radio, ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And on the ABC Listen app.
And a very pleasant holiday Monday from New South Wales. Good afternoon to you from Stadium Australia. We have a great rivalry game to look forward to in just under an hour between Canterbury Bankstown and Parramatta. The Bulldogs will regain top spot from Canberra with a win, while the Eels, who have been playing much better of late, but still second last on 10 points. However, that's only 4 points outside the top eight. Alongside Gillaroo's World Cup winning captain, Ruan Sims, allegedly, former Canberra, Penrith and New Zealand Warriors coach, Matthew Guy Pearce Elliott. I'm Andrew Moore. Thanks for joining us. It is the final game of round 14. The team news is in, and for Canterbury Bankstown, big news, Lachie Galvin is playing. He's been named on the bench in place of Curtis Moran, who's been playing in this New South Wales Cup game. Lachie Galvin on the bench in jersey 20 for the first time for the Bulldogs. In fact, that might be jersey 23 looking at the program. The other change for Canterbury Bankstown, Lockkurt Mann will go to the bench. Bailey Haywood will start at lock in jersey number 14. And the 18th man is Curtis Moran. For Parramatta, no changes to the starting lineup. However, a couple to the bench. You can scratch Lucas Moretti and Ryan Madison and replace them with, in 19, Matt Dury. And in 18, very exciting youngster, Joash Papali. The 18th man for Parramatta is Joey Lussick. The referee here today will be Jared Sutton with Grant Atkins in the bunker. The crowd at the moment, and who knows, are we headed for 60,000 plus here? At the moment, there'd be 20-odd thousand in the house. The weather has turned bleak in the last half hour or so. The rain looks like it may even be set in. It's very overcast. Arriving here a couple of hours ago, it was cool but bright and sunny. That seems a distant memory now. It looks very bleak, as I say, here at Stadium Australia. We've got, despite all that, a really entertaining game in the New South Wales Cup that's going down to the wire. And with 6 minutes to go, it's Canterbury Bankstown 34, leading the Western Suburbs Magpies 30. The Magpies just scored a great try. But they led 18-0 in no time, the Bulldogs, but at the moment 34-30 in favour of Canterbury Bankstown over the Western Suburbs Magpies. On the pre-game show, Bulldogs CEO Aaron Warburton will join us in the box shortly. Plus, we'll speak with Penrith winger Tom Jenkins after his three-try performance yesterday in the win over Wests. Your text messages are welcome at any time on the usual number 0467 920 222. Queensland coach Billy Slater today announced a 20-man squad for State of Origin 2 on Wednesday week in Perth, and halfback and captain Daly Cherry-Evans has been dropped. Tom Dearden will be the Maroons halfback. We'll go through that and hear from Billy Slater shortly. The New South Wales team will be named tonight after this game. All right, let's go. Matthew Elliott, a very good afternoon to you.
Oh, Andrew, great to be here. Now, just a question for you.
Yes.
I'd be pretty happy with the $10 ticket at the moment because they're way, way back up in the grandstand.
Yes.
Not getting this cold rain dumping on them where the people down by on the sideline are probably thinking, oh, I wish I'd just spent the 10 bucks.
Yeah, I may have been deprived of oxygen up there, but at least I'd be dry.
Exactly, exactly. And at least you'd be here. Oh, sorry, Ruana. Just...
Well, I did start to have Carrington Park Bathurst feels because we the intro was playing and there was an empty chair between us, just like when Carrianus was 2 hours late in Bathurst because of his electric car issues. But as she used to do as a player, both in rugby union and particularly rugby league, she is on the burst with power and precision. Ruan Sims is here on time because you're being introduced on air right now. How are you, Roo?
I'm good, thank you. Look, there's some stress sweating happening. I'm not going to lie to you, but I work best under pressure and I feel like I've probably peaked early. I was going to say I've delivered, but I think I've probably peaked early. You thought I was faster in the blue shirt.
Yes.
I was faster today.
Yeah, right.
Way faster. And I actually whacked a couple of people with my bag on the escalator on the way up. And I apologised on the way through, but...
But you didn't bend
down
really to pick them
care.
Up again.
No. I just left a swathe of destruction in my path.
That sounds like the Sims family. Yeah. Perfect.
I guess your skill set was really elevated there where you moved your bag from left hand to right hand.
Yeah, absolutely. It went left shoulder, but I was actually working on my shoulder escapes as well. So, like, I'd throw the left elbow up and out over, and I got through a slight gap. I went shimmied sideways, and I went through the right elbow, slid through. So... Skill base is on point. Still.
I think the people are going to hear about this, Andrew.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'll just move a little further. Sounds like the skills remain in place. Well, Roo, you've had to rush here and fought, very heavy traffic. It's a very busy precinct here today.
Very busy.
Not only do we have, potentially 60,000 plus, but Katy Perry concert is on next door tonight as well.
So that'll do it.
It's going to be a little bit chaotic, I dare say, but... It's going to be a great occasion with a big crowd and a big atmosphere as the Magpies score another great try in the corner to level this New South Wales Cup game at 34-all in now quite reasonably heavy rain with 2.5 minutes to go in the game and a kick to come from the touchline. But this should be a sensational game. It's two great rivals, Canterbury and Parramatta, and even though they're polar opposite in terms of positions on the table, we know Parramatta's playing a lot better of recent times. This could be a beauty.
Yeah, I think it will be. I absolutely do think it will be a really good one. I mean, we saw a cracking game yesterday afternoon over at Western Sydney Stadium. Yeah. I thought that was incredible. And, that was 13th and 15th playing off. Again, similar sort of thing here. Obviously, the Bulldogs are at the top of the ladder and the Eels, with Mitch Moses in, are a very different outfit. And, I think it's going to be really, really exciting. This weather, I think, will level it a little bit more. I think the Bulldogs are quite daytime specialists. So they've got quite a good record during dry daytime weather. It'll be really interesting to see how it does pan out, but it could sort of tighten up the game a little bit this weather.
Their two losses have been touch-ups to Brisbane and the Dolphins, both in the wet.
Yeah.
So,
well, there you go.
You might be on point. Lachie Galvin playing Matty, what impact can he have today off the bench, let alone for the remainder of the season?
It's going to be interesting to see how they actually use him today because obviously he's a halves specialist. So I'm not sure how they actually get him on the field to play. I know people have talked about him being a lock, but then you've got Hayward there as well, who's a half that's converted to that lock position. He's doing a fantastic job. So if you said, how do you think they're going to use him? The only thing I can think of is that they move Sexton out of the team.
Well, I was thinking they could potentially move Sexton into nine for a spell and then Galvin comes on into the halves. That's sort of where I would potentially see a shift happening. It's a good headache for a coach to have a plethora of options in a halves position. But, it'll be really interesting. But I tell you what, he'll be looking to rip in today, the young man.
And by the way, the kick for goal unsuccessful. New South Wales Cup, Canterbury Bankstown and West Magpies 34-all with 1 minute and 6 seconds to go as Blake Taff attempts a short kickoff for Canterbury in the hopes the Bulldogs get the ball back. And they do. They'll have the ball 25 out from the Magpies line. Tom will get away with it, so I want to get especially your reaction, Matt, as a Queenslander, the news of their squad announced today for Origin 2. It's only a squad, and in alphabetical order, it's Kurt Capewell, who's been recalled, Pat Carrigan, Xavier Coates, Lindsay Collins, Reuben Cotter, Tom Dearden, who'll be the halfback with Daly Cherry-Evans dropped, Tino Fasuamala-Awi, Maweke Fatawake, despite only four hit-ups the other day in State of Origin 1. He's still there. Harry Grant, Valentine Holmes is retained. Corey Horsbury gets called in. So does Jack Howarth. Trent Liero, Ezra Mam gets called in. Kurt Mann, Cameron Munster, Jeremiah Nene, and also Kalen Ponga, Hamiso Tabuai-Fadou, and Robert Toya. Now, Billy Slater, on announcing the team, spoke on DCE being dropped.
Don't take any decision lightly, whether it's a player keeping their spot or another player coming in. All Queenslanders are considered, and we just feel, you know, Tom's the right person for the number 7 jersey right now.
What was it about Tom that made you feel this way?
Yeah, firstly, you won't hear a negative word from me about Daly Cherry Evans. You know, what he's given this jersey and what he's done for this footy team and this group, you know, that'll be with all Queenslanders and with Daly for the rest of his life, and no one can take that away from him. So, but yeah, we just feel that, you know, you earn every opportunity to play in this jersey, and we just feel that Tom Dearden has earned the opportunity to play in the number 7 jersey, and we feel it's the right thing for the footy team.
Billy, on the DCE decision, there'll be a sense that he's been made the scapegoat for the game one loss, given it's the only major change. Why is that not the case?
Well, it's not the case. It's just a case of, you know, the best person for the position. So, you know, I'm sure people have their opinion. I'm sure you'll have your opinion on it. So, yeah, it is what it is. At the end of the day, you know, when you're in this position to make decisions, you've got to think for the footy team and what the best thing is for the footy team, and that's what we thought.
So that's talking about essentially why he came to the decision to drop Daly Cherry Evans, not only the halfback but also the captain. And he also spoke on Tom Dearden and how he may change the way Queensland plays.
We certainly want to play to our players' strengths. You know, there's some areas in game one that we didn't get right. You know, so, you know, changing the number 7 jersey and the personnel there, you know, that's not going to fix everything, and we need to make sure that we look at the game in game one and perform better.
So the players out from game one, Daly Cherry Evans and Beau Firma, who in the 17, but also gone from the squad, Jesse Arthurs and Kulakefu Finifuiaki, and in come Kurt Capewell, Corey Horsburgh, Jack Howarth and Ezra Mam. So as a Queenslander, Padre, firstly, your reaction to the Daly Cherry Evans decision?
I personally don't agree with it. And the big thing for me is when you've got, you know, Moses and Cleary in the halves, you've got an unbelievable kicking game repertoire. You know, what Tom Dearden, I'm a fan. I really am a fan. Yep. Where's Queensland kicking game coming from? Yep. Munster's not bad as your secondary kicker, but Daly Cherry Evans, you know, didn't get the opportunity to kick without any pressure on him in that first game. So I personally don't agree with it. I also think that the direction he gives and the leadership he brings would be something that, you know, I think would be sorely missed.
What about you, Ru?
I think it's a really difficult call to make. You know, for me, the areas that I felt Queensland didn't get right was actually their middle. They got rolled through their middle. I think New South Wales middle really dominated that. And when your middle is getting rolled as a half, you don't have much opportunity to actually play your best kind of football, because everything's on the back foot. You have significant kick pressure. There's a lot of that happening. But, you know, it's a difficult call as a coach to drop key players like that. And I can understand that, you know, Billy's feeling the pressure, and I understand his answer. But for me, I was keeping DCE in the squad, because then he then went on the next few days later and had an absolute belter for Manly. An absolute belter. He killed it, brained it. So, you know, it's a difficult one, but, you know, it's like I said, they're difficult decisions that get made, and yeah, it's a toughie, but only time will tell whether it is the correct decision or not. But like I said, the middle was actually what concerned me for Queensland.
And the other thing, yeah, one player from the back line has been dropped. It just seems to me a bit strange that it's Daly, Cherry Evans and no others, because there are a couple, especially defensively, who really struggled in that first Origin game. But we don't yet know the makeup of the 17, Matty, so do you think Kurt Capewell will be part of it? Corey Horsbrough surely will be part of it. Jack Howarth, Ezra Mam, how many of those do you think will be actually part of the 17?
I think Kurt Capewell is a really good inclusion, because he gives you that utility off the bench. And they didn't have that in the game. They really need to, as as Rue just pointed out, they really need to stock up their middles. Corey Horsburgh needs to play.
He has to be in. He was in for me game one.
But because in that first set, they missed three tackles in their first set and they went 55 metres. And that was a massive concern for me.
You're with Matthew Elliott, Ruan Sims. I'm Andrew Moore here on ABC Sport. And at least in some states, of course, it's a public holiday Monday. The reason we're here at Stadium Australia for Canterbury Bankstown against Parramatta. Kick-off about 40 minutes away. What crowd do we get? We're here on Good Friday where the record was broken of over 65,000 and Canterbury Bankstown came to the party for their home fans with a convincing win over South Sydney. Unfortunately, the weather has turned foul in the last half hour to an hour or so. Whether that has any impact on the crowd, I don't know. But from pretty early on in the New South Wales Cup game, which has finished in a 34-all draw between the Bulldogs and Magpies, there were people on that eastern side of the field right at the very top level, having paid $10 for their tickets. Another brainchild of Canterbury and their CEO, Aaron Warburton, who joins us in the box as he did on Good Friday. Good to see you, Aaron. How are you going?
Hello, Andrew. Very well, mate. How are you?
Mate, it was such a success on Good Friday. It was amazing, and even because Canterbury also played so well, but the atmosphere from start to finish was great. And speaking, when we had players on after the game, Max King in particular, and we know how passionate and emotional he is, a great fellow, was talking about the walk from the hotel to the ground and the amount of people there. He said, I was crying walking to the ground. It meant so much. Players aren't used to playing this sort of thing. So it would end up being a great success, right?
Yeah, if he was crying that time around, I think they doubled the crowd on the walk across. So I don't like to see, wouldn't like to have seen
today
this time around. But yeah, look, the fans have shown up again and we're about 1,000 ticket sales behind where we were for Good Friday.
Really?
So it comes down to member attendance and if the rain, yeah, keeps people away.
But no matter what, more than 60,000 have been sold.
It's on track, yeah. So we, and the $10 tickets, you mentioned those. First time around, they actually encouraged a lot of just general ticket sales.
Yeah.
I've heard from a number of fans already that have said, you know, it's midway through the year, cost of living. They've been able to bring the family. So that's all we need to hear.
Well, one of the more impressive things from our perspective, talking to you out of the Good Friday game, was the legitimate concern you have for the fans. And you mentioned the lean years, and this is the time to reward fans when things are going well. So it's a great idea. Was that ever a debate whether you'd do that again today?
Look, as soon as we get an inkling that the lower bowl will sell out, we can open level six. So the logistics behind it, this stadium was built, what, 110,000 originally, yeah. And the reconfiguration says that, as I said, 40 to 45,000 is a really good crowd here. But once you can start opening the upper ends of level four and then six, and because we don't offer a membership option in level six, we can sell them at $10. Mm. The last thing we want to do is actually start jeopardising our membership program where people invest for the future. But
has there been any consternation from members?
No, not really. Once you start explaining that, look, you don't buy memberships on level six, and $10 times, say, three or four for a family to come out, they can come out and buy food and beverage and have a good day of it.
I was wondering, too, whether being Good Friday, the Easter show is on next door, whether that's the perfect kind of, we've been to the Easter show for a few hours, $10, wow, we can go and see the footy.
That's
right. As opposed to now, no Easter show being on, only Katy Perry later tonight. Was that a concern that because, I don't know how many, can you even work out how many you got from the Easter show?
It was hard to work out. What we did, just from visually seeing a number of footy fans going into the Easter show, making a day of it, versus those that spent the time with the family and saw the stadium full and wanted to be a part of it that way, it's difficult to work out because Ticketmaster managed the tickets for the Easter show and Ticketek managed here. You can't cross over.
Right.
But that was always, you know, we knew King's birthday was coming around. It's a public holiday. There's not too much to do in town. But in saying that, we put a show on and we just think that, a crowd of 60,000 is very fitting for this clash.
Along with, like, game day stuff, the engagement and the growth of the club seems to be really apparent, the fan engagement in particular. What strategically have you done that from an organisational side of things?
It's a great question. And for me, coming back to the club, so I spent a number of years here, my junior years, left for 5 or 6 years and came back. And just knowing how big this club can be, we just had to marry that up with really good people. So, again, joining the club in 21, we recruited really heavily across the executive level. We've got 70-odd full-time staff now. There were about 35, 40 when I came back. And it's a really simple plan, was just listening to our fans, our customers. Without them, the football club doesn't exist. So understanding that they just want to know, they want to be connected, they want to feel part of it, and they want to have a voice. So we've just made sure all of those things are available to them and the club's grown on the back of it.
Be really interested to hear that at that executive level that you just talked about. What level of connection do you have with, you know, with Gus Gould and Cameron Schiraldo, and how does that collaboration work?
Yeah, Cameron's been great. I get asked a lot. We sit down on panels together from time to time, and football comes first. Winning games is the almighty. However, Cameron understands, as long as the communication's there and the timelines are sort of matching, he's very open. So it was Cameron's idea first time around and this time to bring the team across via foot, just to get the feeling of a finals game. And that's, Cameron knows that sells more tickets, that sells more merchandise. He understands more revenue for the club generally means more costs and expenditure for the football team. So it goes hand in hand. He sits under Gus in the structure. So I've got six executives. Gus is one of them through finance, commercial, marketing pathways. And as I said, you bring good people into a business, give them a really clear vision and the tools to do it, and they're all just kicking goals.
Well, you spoke about growth, and one of the biggest areas of growth is the women's game.
Yeah.
It grows double figures year on year, participation-wise. Obviously, a bigger in for you guys. You're into the NRLW competition this year. It has been a bit of a rocky start. Yeah. How is it panning out now?
Yeah, it's been enormous. We missed out on our application a few years back. So to be the 11th/12th franchise with the Warriors is enormous. We're about 10 minutes away from seeing our NRLW team. They're going to come out here and be introduced to the crowd. I didn't realise when we missed out, and we had a great application or so we thought, but now that we're building this new Centre of Excellence, which starts in October, the first gender equal facility in the whole league, you know, everyone would do that. We're just fortunate enough to be sort of next cab off the rank, where every square metre to the men's program gets dedicated to the female program. That was very much a big part of our application, but our pathways have been strong for a number of years. The girls who we lost because we didn't have an NRLW team, have come back and they're, you know, you put a Bulldogs jersey on, and most clubs will talk very fondly of their badge, their jersey, but it's pretty special for the girls who have returned and the girls who have come through from 13, 14, 15-year-olds who are now getting a crack. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I really love the fact as well that you haven't just gone out and bought a lot of players. You have actually developed them, and you had the state league competition for the girls. You had that team for a couple of years before you actually got an NRLW side. So you have a genuine pathway from juniors all the way through to NRLW level.
Yeah, and that's every part of the business. It's, you know, you want to go out and buy the best and have that as your strategy. That's great. That's very expensive and there's no real end goal to it versus what we've been able to build. Pathways, male, female. It's there. It's hard work and you can't click your fingers and it happens. But when it starts bearing fruit, it's all worth it.
I think, Aaron, since we spoke with you during that Easter long weekend, you've been confirmed as one of the four teams going to Vegas next year. So the smile comes on your face instantly. And we were there for year one. Unfortunately, weren't sent there this year, hopefully next year. But it's such an amazing league experience. What does it mean to your club, though, do you think?
Yeah, they, fans and players alike. I was getting a number of messages. We were fortunate enough to be there in year one. All the CEOs travelled across. Year two was on off our own bat that I went across with Gus and our chairman just to really understand, was this for us at this time? We always knew it was going to be, but timing was everything. Cameron bought in. He'll head over at the end of the season too for a bit of a scoping session and just understand the movings. And you've been there, so it's so important to get there and feel Vegas. It's you see the strip on a map, it's big, and it takes you hours to move around. So logistics are of the utmost. And
do you see yourselves being based in Vegas?
I think we'll go straight in, yeah. We haven't made that final call yet. We may do a bit of recovery a bit slower than most of the other teams. Like we might come back a little slower through LA or through Hawaii. But in saying that...
Hawaii sounds good.
Yeah, why not both? The two points, knowing that it's a pretty brutal start to the season regardless, there's no easy games in the NRL. We feel like we're doing pretty well this year because we've had a plan, we've stuck to the process. Vegas just throws all that out. So it'll be a huge test. But our fans have bought the most tickets already. We've just released our packages as well. So we'll have a Bulldogs hub over there. And we're looking at making part of Old Town Vegas up near Fremont Street a bit of a Burwood Road replica. So we want a Joe Bell's version.
It's going to be loud, baby.
We want access for a few cars and whatnot. But, yeah, we're already starting to think how to make it the biggest and best.
There's going to be some good food on that street.
I can also envisage the launch that they have at Fremont Street, having been there for the first one. It blew everyone's head off.
Yeah.
To see players and coaches just smiling and talking to anybody, you don't get that anywhere else. But I can imagine with a contingent of Bulldogs fans, it's going to be a whole new level. Couple more quick ones, we'll let you go. Lockie Galvin, since we last spoke, has signed with the club, 3.5-year deal now, making his debut for Canterbury today. And there's been so much talk of Lockie Galvin, but I'm interested to know from your perspective as a CEO, when something that big with a player mid-season comes about, how much part of everyone's day does that take up for the days or weeks leading up to that signing?
It was huge. So the last couple of weeks, knowing that he may have debuted today, he may have come through Cup, that was Cameron's call, but the team actually had a number of scenarios built out. So we were, if he was going to be announced 24 hours out, 48 hours, if he wasn't going to be announced. So everything was sort of built in, which I was really, really happy and pleased. The team had thought, well, you know what, they didn't want to get thrown anything at any given point. So they built all that out. Lockie's just been a breath of fresh air. You may have seen his face popped up on the camera a little earlier and the crowd gave him a huge cheer. I thought we'd scored, but it was just Lockie on the camera. And you know, I first met Lockie a couple of years back playing at Westfields. So that was my old school. And so I took a real interest in Lockie. Luke Vella, who was coaching through there, and he'd come through our grades. And it was Lockie the person before Lockie the player. It just so happens that he's a pretty talented footy player too. So, yeah, we'll see what happens today, where he gets injected. Some things may be in Ciro's hands, some things may not be, depending how the game pans out. But, yeah, I'm pretty confident we've got a good one.
Finally, start of origin selection. A lot of fans don't like if their team has too many, but I'm just trying to remember the figures that came up with a few weeks ago. From 2006, the average amount of state of origin players in a squad that, from the team that wins the premiership is 4.9. So effectively, five origin players you need to win a comp, and it's only happened twice where there's been four or less in that period of time. So ultimately, even though there might be some short-term hardship, it's a great thing for a club to have origin players. You've got Stephen Crichton, who was so outstanding again in Origin 1 with his amazing defence, your leader here at Canterbury. Max King made his Origin debut in Brisbane, and it looks like Kurt Mann may well make his debut for Queensland in Origin 3. What does that mean for you as CEO of a club to have
The easy thing to say players? Is, oh, we don't want Origin players. It's the opposite. We know Origin makes better men, better footballers. We miss them for the week. If there's anything to come out of it, we seem to, you know, an 18th man tends to come from Canterbury, has for the last few seasons. That hurts us. That's one thing I believe the NRL should look at. But on the other side, you know, they might get thrust into the game early too. So from a player welfare perspective, I get it. But it's just frustrating. I know the fans, they're very proud when they see a Canterbury player put on an Origin jersey. Hopefully NRL players in the not-too-distant future. But seeing them sit on the bench and not play and not be part of our game day is frustrating. But Origin, there's no you know, there's no silver bullet with working that through as best as possible. But, look, having I'd have more if we could.
Yeah. I tell you what's probably more exciting from your guys' perspective is that you've built two Origin players. You've got them into the position. Like Stephen Crichton, world class, and you brought him over because of his leadership, and he is world class. But Max King and Kurt Mann moving into that position because of the work that they're doing here on the ground.
It's huge. It's quite the opposite. You think of the media narrative a number of years ago was you'd come to Canterbury and you'd forget about rep footy. It was quite the opposite. And these guys, it's through nothing else than their hard work, their dedication, and not giving up. Particularly those two you mentioned, it's just just enormous as they run out into the field for warm up here. It's
good
special.
Reception.
Yeah, it's pretty big. This is a big crowd already. Probably 30-ish in the venue at the moment. So there might be another 10 in the warmer parts of the stadium yet to come out.
Well, Roo was fighting traffic. There's still a lot of people getting out here, which is
there's a swathe of destruction on the escalators. That was me, but it's okay. I'll go back and apologise later.
No, you won't. Hey, Aaron, really good to see you. Congratulations again on the initiative of these $10 tickets. As you say, it's a process, and when it gets to the certain amount of tickets sold out in the lower levels, have at it. Why not get as many people out here as possible? And you're riding high, currently second on the table after Canberra's win yesterday, but that could change by 6 o'clock tonight. Thanks for joining us again.
Really appreciate it.
Aaron Warburton, the very impressive CEO of the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs trying to put their fans first and keep a winning product on the field. And we appreciate his time on a busy day. You're with Matt Elliott, Ruan Sims. I'm Andrew Moore here on ABC Sport. And your texts are welcome, 0467 920 222. I just want to get on to yesterday's games quickly, and then we're going to speak to Tom Jenkins. But at Canberra Stadium yesterday, and Matt, you'd be well versed in this being a former Raiders coach for a number of years, it was 5 degrees at kickoff, felt like -2. It was a sellout crowd. In the end, it was 19,500 officially that came through the gates. And it was all about Josh Papali'i, his 319th game, which was a club record. Canberra was down 12-0 in low. Oh, no. But then they scored 36 points in a row to win that. And the last two tries were scored by Big Papa.
Still going, Joe Tarponet. He's caught only 6 metres out. He gets up and plays it back. Good tackle made by Colin Matangi. Then it goes to Papali'i. Try! Josh Papali'i has scored in his 319th record-breaking game at Canberra Stadium. Papali'i crashes over for a try. Great pass from Tarponet, his best mate. And the crowd erupts. They're on their feet here at Canberra Stadium as Josh Papali'i scores a try in his record-breaking game.
I tell you what, could the script be written any better?
As he gets up and plays it back, infield it comes from Paddy. Looks on his outside for Papali'i. Second try, and Josh Papali'i is crossed over for another try. This is unbelievable. Papali'i has scored his second try in his record-breaking game. If the crowd went wild before, they're absolutely going berserk right now. And Josh Papali'i with a shot at goal. I'll let the crowd tell the story here as Papali'i lines the ball up 10 metres to the left-hand side of the uprights. He's kicked it. Josh Papali'i has converted his own try. And there are grown men in front of me hugging each other in sheer jubilation. Such emotion here at Canberra Stadium.
And great calling by Timmy Gavel. And, Matty, when Alan Tung said, could the script writers get it any better? Yes, they could. And they did with a second try. And the crowd was at its loudest when Big Papa smashed that goal.
What about that? I didn't expect him to knock that straight over the black stripe, but he did that. And, it was a great performance. It's really interesting. You talked about how cold it was. Well, I certainly would have been in the coach's box. But, you know, we get a lot of entertainment watching Craig Bellamy walk to the back of the box.
Yes.
When he's losing his stuff. Ricky Stewart's also become extremely entertaining. I wouldn't have been on the sideline on that, but he had his beanie on there. And, yeah, just his excitement is also worth the weight in gold as well.
Seeing an Eskimo jumping around was quite something, wasn't it?
I tell you what, though. When the camera panned to Ricky's face after Big Papa kicked that goal, he was crying. Like, you could see, yeah. And you just could tell how much, as a not just a player but an individual, that he means to that club, just from the reaction that Ricky had.
There was a quote from Ricky after the game. I'm keen to get your perspective, Matt, because I appreciate when you finish coaching teams, relationships with players you coached continue. But he said, to me, Papa is more of a mate than a player I coach. Would that be rare at the time of their playing and you coaching?
It is rare, but it's also something that most coaches, you get a high-level relationship with not all players. It's like when you go to school, right? You know, you have a different... And it also tends to be impacted by your birth certificate. You know, the younger guys tend to be a little bit different, but there's also people that you connect with immediately, and you can see that he has that impact on not just the coach. Mm. You saw when he scored the first try. I thought the crowd were going to jump the fence and jump all over him, but they couldn't get near him because his own players were everywhere. Mm. So I think it's just as much an indication of what a great player he is as the quality of person as well.
Yeah, I agree.
And Canberra, for right this second, sit on top of the table with a for and against differential ahead of the Bulldogs, who will leap them if they win today. We'll talk about the Penrith-West Tigers game in a tick. So I agree with Roo. DCE should still be there. I would have dropped Valentine Holmes, says Charlie in Far North Queensland. Dan says, CEO of the Bulldogs, what an awesome guy. Yeah, he appears it. Dan,
he's very impressive.
Yeah. Well,
isn't he?
When we had him in on Good Friday, you're just like, wow. Because, you know, he's a young man for that role, but he seems to have all the right priorities. And that wouldn't be an easy mix. It would be comfortable working with Cameron Sorallo, I'm sure. But having Phil Gould there as the dominant face of the club would not always be easy, and they seem to have worked out a really good arrangement how they all go about their separate jobs. G'day, Andrew and crew. You had a caller phone in yesterday and ask about how listeners can catch up with an interview that was missed previously in regards to the Sharks Leagues Club. How do we find it? Many thanks from Glenn on the cold central west of New South Wales. If you go to the ABC NRL Daily podcast feed, and just like all of the pre-game show from today will be on there from Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday and Sunday. It'll all be there. So if you want to hear that interview with Dino Mazzatesta, one we did on Saturday with Isaiah Katoa, if you haven't heard that, I really recommend you have a listen to that. We spoke to Katoni Staggs yesterday, Dennis's Song of the Week, all of that, Christopher's Corner, the whole lot will be there on the ABC NRL Daily podcast feed. Just search for that, ABC NRL Daily, wherever you get your podcasts, or find it by the ABC Listener.
I can give you the cliff notes on that if you like, because I was in on that interview with Dino.
Sure.
So at the moment, the club is not in a position where they're comfortable taking it back off the developer. They have a few issues that they would like cleaned up. Once they get that handed back over, it'll be 12 months for them to do the fit out, and then it'll be all systems go.
So goodness knows how long that
yeah,
will
be. Yeah, so it's just going to be however long it takes to sort out that little legal issue, and then 12 months from that.
And then interest onto that, I would suggest.
Yeah, so they're hoping by Christmas next year.
The Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs 2025 NRLW squad currently being introduced to the crowd here at Stadium Australia, which must be over the 40,000-45,000 mark at the moment. Still light rain falling. It's still very grey overhead. But again, we can't see behind us here on the western stand. But over on that eastern side, the Cathy Freeman stand, that top bowl would be about 40% full already, including seats at the very, very top where you'd struggle to pick them out with binoculars on. Matt Elliott, Ruan Sims, I'm Andrew Moore here on ABC Sport. Yesterday, we were at Western Sydney Stadium, and the week before, Penrith had a really gritty win over Parramatta in a Penrith home game. Yesterday, they played the West Tigers in a West Tigers home game, and it was a really gritty game as well. Penrith 18 defeated the West Tigers 14. Tom Jenkins, the winger, was a standout man of the match. Luke Lewis gave him 3 points in the ABC Player of the Year competition, and he scored a hat-trick of tries. 10 out, 20 in from touch, western side, won by Penrith. Kenny goes left to Cleary, draws his man off, loads to Lungi, quick hands Edwards to Jenkins. He's got Mason to beat. Jenkins is over in the corner, puts it down with his left hand, and Penrith score off the scrum. Kenny, long ball goes left to Cleary, then away to Talangi. Cut out ball, McLean, away to Jenkins. He heads for the goal line. Jenkins, has he got the ball down for Penrith on the stroke of half time? He has. Tom Jenkins has a double, and Penrith have done this how often in the last 5 years? Score on the stroke of half-time. Last tackle, Penrith. Penrith 12, West 10. 17 minutes left. Kenny fires it left to Cleary. Then out the back to Lungi. The ball to McLean. Then away to an unmarked Jenkins. He dives over and scores his third. Yeah, Tom Jenkins ran for 252 metres from 22 carries, 5 line breaks, and 3 tries. Not a bad day's work. And they won. Tom Jenkins is on the line. Tom, how are you going?
Hey, guys. Good, thank you. How are you?
That was a fair day out, mate.
It was good. It was a good day. Good win. One that was needed for sure.
You spoke with John Gibbs on the field after the game over on that far side of the field, and your story this year is so amazing, especially considering the impact you're having now with the team that you started with and that's won 4 straight competitions. Starting at Newcastle, there was thought that you'd give the whole caper away, and here you are now back at Penrith. You've played, I think, now 11 games of the season. Can you believe several months after you're contemplating your future how this has turned out?
Yeah, it's a bit of a surreal one. Obviously, it was tough leaving Newcastle and not knowing what was next kind of thing. So to sort of look back now and see how it's sort of unfolding and how the year's going is good. It's one of those things that I'll probably look back postseason and be able to sit back and reflect on and enjoy it. But yeah, at the moment it's still mid season, so we've still got goals to kick and things to do.
Tom, congratulations on your game yesterday, mate. The thing I'd like to get an insight into is obviously it's a little bit of foreign territory for the Penrith Panthers over the past 5 years, finding yourself where you are on the ladder and a little bit of adversity. I'd be really intrigued to see what the impact of Ivan Cleary's been like and the leadership team on everyone and holding you together.
Oh, thanks, mate. Obviously, it's like you said, it's a bit uncharted. It's a bit different for the majority of the squad. But in saying that, I think as a squad, as a whole, we're all really connected. We all believe, we all know what we can do. But you're right, the leadership team and Ivan, along with the coaching staff, are the ones who drive that the most. They're people who show up every day and know exactly what we want. And if things aren't up to standard, they're the first ones to pull it up. And they'll pull themselves up as well, which is always good.
So that's a calmness they bring as well, because they seem fairly, not relaxed, but they seem fairly clear and calm, you know, from looking at it from the sideline.
Yeah, 100%. I think, like, you could say relaxed in that sense of they just know when things are going right and when things are going wrong and how to control it and how to stay in the moment. I think that's probably the hardest thing being a football player is when things are going wrong, how do you stay in the moment? How do you control the game, get back into rhythm? And I think the leaders are the best at that. They play on the biggest stages, and they like you said, they've just won four in a row. So they know how to get back to that and get back to what they need to do.
Speaking of that calmness, and like obviously you've come a long way, I believe, in this year. Where do you see your growth being as a player? What direction or what improvements do you really want to make to your game?
There's so many things. You could start with physically or mentally. I think mentally is a big one of just maturity and being able to, like, I like the idea of staying where my feet are and being able to just go play by play and not worry too much about the outcome and worry about the focus kind of thing, the process of the game and just sticking with it, being alive at any moment, because you never know. There's so much talent around the field at the moment that one minute you think that there might not be anything going on, and the next thing you know, someone's made a break. And I think my biggest one is just always being ready, being able to make a play when I need to.
Well, Tom, speaking of that, it's an excellent segue. I was going to touch on what has been a real hallmark of the Panthers over the years has just been that constant ability to stay live and to be able to react very, very quickly. And it was no more evident than yesterday afternoon when Scott Sorensen came from his opposite second row position on the field, sprinted downfield to the right-hand side and stopped a certain try from being scored. That kind of effort, it doesn't happen in a vacuum, does it? Like, you guys work so hard at that every single time you take the pitch, training or games.
Yeah, that was massive. Obviously, I'm sorry, as one of those leaders in the group, but he's probably definitely the link man with our left edge. He's keeping us present. He's looking after us kind of thing. We've got a young left edge, so having him there sort of puts us all together, and that helps in that sense. And it shows that we look up to him. We love what he does, what he brings. And then obviously he comes up with that play, and that's massive. That just amplifies what the work he does off the ball and what some or most probably won't see. So, yeah, he's massive.
He's produced a couple of those moments this year, and he's the world's loveliest bloke, Scott Sorensen, but he produced that flick pass out of nowhere against the Roosters. And then he did this yesterday, which ultimately wins Penrith the game, this great tackle by Scott Sorensen. 42 metres out. It's going to come down about 15 out. Who wants it? Dylan does. But it's taken by Bird. Bird sends the ball to the right. West Tigers about to score. No. What a tackle by Scott Sorensen to save the day. A put teeth out from the goal line. That was incredible by Sorensen. On Jareem Buller, who's a it was an amazing, amazing tackle. I know a lot of people are worried it was a hip drop tackle, but to me it was just the most incredible try-saving tackle you'll ever see. Wins you the game, Tom.
Yeah, I agree. To be honest, I didn't see it as a hip drop. I seen it's just, I couldn't believe it. Like, Dreams, he's such a good player. He's so fast. He's so strong. So, it does show the effort that Syro puts in, which is a massive quality of his. And especially Nath. Nath was there as well. I couldn't believe it. I was cheering.
Mate, as someone who comes across as really intelligent, do you know how far Poofteenth is as well?
I think he said Poofteenth.
Poofteenth. Yeah, get the phrase right.
Yeah.
Padre.
It's really, really close.
Very
close. Okay.
Yeah, trust me, Tom felt how close that was.
Well, he's a winger. He knows. He treads that fine line every single week.
Exactly.
With the sideline. But, you know, you spoke about Nathan Cleary, and he had an awesome running battle last night against his previous halves partner in Jerome Luai. Didn't they put a couple of shots on each other, mate?
Yeah, no. It was always expected. Romy's always that character, and it was expected that he was going to come out and have a good game, which he did. But yeah, it's nothing of a surprise. Romy's a quality player, so it was good to see. It was good to see them two go up against each other.
Mm. With the struggles Penrith has had this year, two in a row in 2025 is quite the winning streak at the moment. But you sit only 1 point out of the top eight. So if you had lost either of these last two games against West or Parramatta, it could have almost become like we're mathematically still in it. When you start talking like that, you know you're in big trouble. But the fact is, you are still in it. And with a team, and I appreciate you've had a bit of time in Newcastle over the last year or two, but this team as a squad of players, even allowing for some of these youngsters, know what you're capable of. Do you still believe that improvement will continue as the sniff gets there towards finals time?
Yeah, 100%. Like there's... I didn't do the preseason, but from what I've heard and from what I've seen, definitely there's always the belief, there's always the hunger to want to get better. There's no doubt about that in the playing group. But like you said, over the last 5 years, it just grows and grows, and as a lot would expect or think that it will go away. To be honest, it's probably just even gotten even better. Everyone believes, everyone expects. The expectation of winning is part of the club now, it's showing that things haven't gone the way we'd like it to. You always want to be up the top of the ladder. You always want to be winning, but sometimes that's just not footy. But it's about how far away are we from the top team when you think about it. Bulldogs and Raiders are in such good form now, and so it'll be a good matchup against us because we believe that we're not too far off those teams.
Well, we're talking to your director, Penrith legend Greg Alexander, popped in a little while ago, and we're talking about what's realistic for Penrith if things go well. And Matt said, what about if you finish sixth and become the first team to win it in the NRL area outside the top four? And his beautiful eyes were spinning in circles, Brandy. You like the sound of all of that. Mate, give us a tip today. Parramatta and Canterbury here at Stadium Australia. Who's going to win, you reckon?
Jeez, Doggies will be hard to beat, I reckon, today, but I wouldn't be writing off Mitch Moses. But I think it'll be a close one, but I'd say Doggies will get it over the line.
Sounds good. Mate, I'm so glad you made the decision to keep playing footy. Great to watch this season, and in a role where Penrith desperately needed you to be good in a variety of roles, fullback, centre, wing, it doesn't matter, and fair to play. So outstandingly well again yesterday, vital for Penrith. So well done, mate. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
And enjoy the bye. Tom Jenkins from the Penrith Panthers. What a game yesterday and what a story that is.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.